Part 29, Chapter 7. The fateful moment of the bank meeting arrived. 5 days had passed. Johnny sat alone in the small meeting room that had been prepared and waited for the others to arrive. There was not the slightest doubt in his mind that this was going to be a battle bigger than he had ever fought before. Being Johnny, he had been unwilling to simply sit idly by while McAdam and Baron von Roth prepared. They had been busy enough. For 5 days and nights, the hum of the teleportation rig had resounded through the bowl. Things had come and things had gone on the platform behind the tarpaulins. But they did no talking, lest they be overheard, and the only words that sounded were, "Motors off, no planes approaching, stand by, and fire." Whenever anyone, especially emissaries or the small gray men, had come near the tarpaulins or the curtained corridor to a bunker, stern bank guards had pushed them back peremptorily. All Johnny got from McAdam was,
"Later! Later!"
Not even Angus was talking. He had gotten an estimate that it would be several days. Mr. Tsung had told Johnny that the negotiations of finance and banking were very specialized things. He had added one phrase that had stuck in Johnny's mind.
"The power of money and gold over the souls of men passes all wondering."
The pre-dawn sky of the day after McAdam's arrival had found Johnny in the air. He had heard of a university outside the ruins of an old city named Salisbury, about 175 miles southeast of Kariba. He had tried to get Sir Robert to come along, but the old Scot was hanging on to the radio in the ops room, doing what he could for Edinburgh. Instead, Johnny had taken a couple of Chinese soldiers to shoo off the lions and elephants when they threatened to interrupt his studies. The university was a ruin, but the library could be sorted out amid the dust and debris, the roof and walls having stood. Camped out in the wreckage, Johnny had pried congealed packs of catalog cards apart and had pretty well found what he was looking for. It had been a well-endowed library once. It included lots of economics texts, probably because the relatively new nation had had a dreadful economic struggle of it. The texts were in English, and they covered the history of economics and banking pretty well. Mr. Tsung had been absolutely right. It was a highly specialized subject, and when one went wrong, like some nut named Keynes they had all become mad at, it really messed things up. What Johnny got out of it was that the state was for people. He had suspected that was the way it should be. And individuals worked and made things and exchanged them for other things. And it was easier to do it with money. But money itself could be manipulated. The Chinkos had been great and patient teachers, and Johnny knew how to study. And with a mind like his, he got things as quickly as a traveling shot. 4 of those 5 days had been spent ears deep in books, nose full of dust, with Chinese guards warning off black mamba snakes and African buffalo. Sitting there, in the meeting room, waiting for the others, he had the satisfaction of knowing that, while he was no expert, he would at least have a grip on what this battle was all about. Sir Robert came in, grumbling and cross, and took a seat over to the side with Johnny. Even though the small gray men had indicated it was between Sir Robert and them, the War Chief of Scotland knew that Claymore's and Lochaber axes weren't going to win this one, and as far as he was concerned, it was all up to the experts. Basically, he was very concerned about Edinburgh. They had gotten food and water through into the various shelters with thin hoses, but rock was still crumbling in on their tunnel efforts. They had been driving in huge, heavy pipe casings for days now, and the only hope was that they were not crumbling this time. Dries Glatton and Lord Voraz came in. A table for 4 had been set in the middle of the room, and they took 2 of the places on one side of it. They were very neatly dressed in gray suits. They had their arms full of papers and attaché cases, and they put them down. They looked exactly like hungry sharks. Neither Johnny nor Sir Robert had acknowledged their arrival.
You don't seem very pleased this morning,
said Lord Voraz.
We be men of the sword,
said Sir Robert.
We have small truck with the money changers i' the temple.
Sir Robert's sudden use of English caused both small gray men to turn on their vocoders.
I noticed,
said Dries Glotten,
when I came in, that there were 50 soldiers in white tunics and red pants all around in the rifle pits in the bowl.
An honor guard.
They had an assortment of weapons. And one huge fellow certainly looked more like a brigand than an officer in charge of an honor guard.
I wouldn't let Colonel Levan hear you say that.
Do you realize,
said Dries Glotten,
that if you killed the emissaries and us, you would become an outlaw nation? They know where we are. You would have a dozen fleets in here smashing you to bits.
Better to fight fleets than be a cut-up with bits of paper,
said Sir Robert, gesturing at their piles of it.
There's no threat in the Russians if you tell the truth and behave. We ken this be a battle of wits and skullduggery, but it's a battle all the same and a bloody one.
Lord Voraz turned to Johnny.
Why do you regard us in so hostile a fashion, Sir Lord Johnny? I assure you we have only the friendliest feelings for you personally. We admire you greatly. You must believe that.
He seemed, and probably was, sincere.
But banking is banking,
said Johnny.
And business is business. Is that it?
Of course. However, personal regard sometimes enters in. And in your case, it most certainly does. I tried several times in the last few days to find you. It is unfortunate that we could not have had our talk before this meeting here. We are actually your personal friends.
In what way?
Asked Johnny, coolly. A grizzly bear or an elephant would have backed off when Johnny sounded like that. But not Lord Voraz.
Do you realize that when a planet is sold, all its people and all its technology are sold with it? Didn't you read the brochure? You and your immediate associates are exempted in the sale, and so is anything you may have developed.
How generous,
said Johnny with cold sarcasm.
Since we had no chance to talk and the others seemed to be late, I can tell you now, we have worked out an offer. We will create a technical department in the Galactic Bank and make you the head of it. We will build a fine factory in Snotch, that's the capital of the system, you know, provide you with everything you need and give you a lifetime contract. If the figure I already offered seems too low, we can negotiate it. You would not lack for money.
And money is everything,
said Johnny, bitingly. Both bankers were shocked at his tone.
But it is,
cried Lord Voraz.
Everything has a price. Anything can be bought.
Things like decency and loyalty can't be.
Young man,
said Lord Voraz, sternly,
you are very talented and have many other fine qualities, I am sure. But there have been some radical omissions in your upbringing.
I wouldn't have talked to him like that,
warned Sir Robert.
Oh, I'm sorry. Forgive me. In my effort to help, I permitted myself to be carried away.
That's better,
growled Sir Robert, and loosened his grip on his claymore.
You see, a scientist is supposed to be hired by a company. What he develops belongs to the company. It's quite disastrous for a scientist to try to go it alone and manage his own developments and affairs. All companies and all banks and certainly all governments agree on this totally. A scientist is supposed to quietly draw his salary, turn over his patents to the company, and go on working. It's all been arranged that way. Why, if he tried to do anything any other way, he'd spend all his life in law courts. That is how it has been carefully arranged.
So the shoes a cobbler makes belong to him, but the developments of a scientist belong to the company or the state. I see, very plain.
Lord Voraz overlooked the sarcasm, or didn't hear it.
I am so glad you understand. Money is everything, and all things and talent are for sale. And that's the heart and soul of banking, the very cornerstone of business, a first principle.
I thought making a profit was.
Oh, that too, that too. So long as it is an honest profit. But believe me, the heart and soul...
I'm so glad to know that banking and business have a heart and soul. I hadn't been able to detect one thus far.
Oh dear, you are being sarcastic.
Anything that destroys decent people has no heart and soul. And by that I include banking, business, and government. These concerns can only exist if they are for people, if they serve the wants and needs of the ordinary being.
Lord Voraz looked at him searchingly. He thought for a bit. There was something in what Sir Lord Johnny was saying. He gave it up. He was a banker.
Indeed, you are a peculiar young man. Perhaps when you get old enough to understand the ways of the world...
Sir Robert's tensing was halted by the arrival of MacAdam and Baron Von Roth.
Good day.
Who's a peculiar young man?
Said Baron Von Roth.
Johnny? Indeed he is, thank God. I see you two were early.
He shot at Drees and Lord Voraz.
Never saw anybody so anxious to collect their pound of flesh. Shall we begin?